Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Ruthie.
Yes.
I have a confession to make to you and to our listeners. I bite my nails. I don't bite my toenails. Don't be a fucking piece of... Some listeners are like, oh, your toenails? I didn't say that. I bite my fingernails.
How long have you been doing it for?
Forever.
Me too.
When people are like, you know, use a nail thing. I'm like, I don't like it.
Mm-mm.
So I have chipped my tooth before biting my nails.
Oh, that's competitive nail biting.
Went to the dentist. I have an amazing dentist. Fucking love my dentist.
Yeah.
She was like, so many people chip their tooth biting their nails.
I've never heard of that.
They do. Now here we are in the pandemic. We're like, what, 5-6 months in?
I think 7.
I've done it again.
You chipped your tooth?
Biting my nails.
Top or bottom?
Bottom, middle, two. So like the main Z's.
Do you have strong nails? Do you eat a lot of calcium? Are you
love calcium? Yeah. Big into dairy.
You love that vitamin D.
I'm doing a lot of got milk commercials. Yep. Still, even now. It chipped again and I haven't gone to the dentist. One, because it's a pandemic, even though I don't think that's an issue.
I don't think
but
so.
But two, I haven't gone out of fucking sheer embarrassment that I've done it twice.
Oh my God.
Because I have experienced this since high school. I think I'm good at shaping the nail with my teeth. I truly believe that.
So
I
gross.
Truly believe it. I truly believe that I'm good at shaping the nail with my teeth.
I think I am too. I try to keep my nails painted all the time so that I don't bite them.
Me too, to hide my passion of biting them. Our guest today, Ruthie.
Oh, I love her.
Has sent us some drinks, Courage and Stone. She has her own drink line,
she
as
does.
If she hasn't already done so many things in her career.
Yeah, it's like she's a TV host. She hosts Whose Line Is It Anyway? She's the voice of Lana and Archer. She currently hosts a Prime Rewind show on Amazon Prime for Inside the Boys. These are all current things that she's doing. So
basically saying that we're doing nothing.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel.
Pretty much.
She's done so many things. And she should be. She's absolutely incredible. And our chat with her today is absolutely phenomenal. So we won't keep you guys from it. Please welcome Aisha Tyler. Well, you are the first guest to ever bring us And we're in a pandemic. We're not the three of us are not in the same location.
Nope. Yeah.
But yet still delivered booze. Courage
cheers,
and Stone.
You guys. We
cheers.
Like, we do a little virtual cheers.
Wait, when did this launch?
Well, our hard launch was January of this year.
Oh my God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is I mean, oh, I know things like this can take a while because there's so many elements to mm-hmm. distribution, but my God, that is that you must feel so good.
I'm like, so right by, I'm just
and
so
now it is out there.
Well, and like the perfect timing of being in quarantine. Like, luckily, you were launching something that was really
people needed.
People really needed it. It
that
was
is
an essential.
So good.
It was thank you're an essential
you,
worker.
Yeah, yeah. No, oh God, thank you.
You are.
You see me.
I see. Yeah.
I know, just because everyone's listening, I just want to point out, because you obviously can look up Courage and Stone to see what I'm talking about, but I want to just tell you, the design of these bottles is so satisfying.
Oh, thank you.
Because it feels like a sophisticated flask almost.
Dude, you hit it. I wanted it to be like a flask vibe. This is an 80 proof drink. It's the same proof as whiskey. So it's got that like delicious whiskey vibe. But it's packs a serious punch. It's meant for grownups.
I took a sip and audibly out loud went, damn. Like I was like, holy shit, do I drink Manhattans now? I don't think I've ever ordered a Manhattan. And I was
You're
like
a sophisticated lady, Ruthie.
Yeah, I was like,
I feel like there's nothing more dad-ish than just being at home making sophisticated moonshine. I feel like
it
that's
is very dad. I was raised by a single dad. Like this is my destiny.
You're just stirring in a bathtub.
Just like
your husband's like, can I take a shower? Not for a couple months.
No, you can burn a bath like the rest of us, buddy. Go to the guest bathroom. Get yourself a washcloth.
Did your dad drink a lot of cocktails?
My dad is not a drinker, interestingly enough. Like, not at all. He's very... Yeah. My dad is... you know, it's legal here in California, so I'll just be frank. My dad's a pot guy. He always has been. I think I've seen him have every drink he's ever had in his entire adult life. Like, he'll have a third of a glass of champagne and be like, ooh, tart. So he's not a drinker. But I have all those qualities. He loves a sticky bud, though.
Did he smoke joints?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, my parents are like pure 70s, you know, like a pure expression of like 70s culture, like moved out to California because they wanted to be a part of the like transcendental meditation movement.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
We lived in an ashram for a while. My mom and we went to Ethiopia to study with the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. My mom lived in India. So they were like hardcore West Coast.
That's insane.
Northern California hippies.
All of those things you just said could be an entire podcast.
Dude, you did all that
season. We were just discussing it. Season 3 of The Vow, bitches. What?
Season 3. We're already there.
Yeah, the Tylers.
Did you partake in all that? Was that?
I mean, I was a kid, so I was a kid, so yeah, that was my life growing up. We were vegetarian and didn't believe in television.
Was that both of them, or is one a little bit more than the other? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, both of them until my parents divorced. And then my mom is still, I mean, my whole family, actually, like my father is not as active in that world as he used to be, but like my entire family all eventually settled into Buddhism. So my mom's been a practicing Zen Buddhist for like 25 years. My sister is a Nichiren Buddhist, and my father and my stepmom like got married in India. So like my family's still very like kind of Eastern philosophy. They vibe on that stuff. And yes, everybody, you know, everybody loves the cannabis.
And you're a Buddhist. Is that a cheesy joke or does that work?
That's I worship at the altar of the bourbon cask.
As soon as it popped in my head, I was like, that's cheesy, but you can't keep that in your brain. You gotta keep
firing, you know? You don't want to let the riff go rust.
I swing it every single pitch.
Bring it.
Wait, what was it like growing up on an ashram?
You know, it's interesting. Like, I've been having a lot of like strange, like triggering experiences with all these documentaries, like Wild Country.
Right. Because I watch that and I go, well, I would join that.
I was like, all of a sudden, that, like, man.
Right. Wild Country until they started poisoning the food.
It seemed pretty pleasant. I was
like, yoga.
They're making out. Hugging. They're, you know,
and you're like, just nature, people getting together, community.
They were helping all the homeless people, man. They were taking off the streets. I mean, like, I recognized a lot of Wild Wild Country. Like that, like a lot of that was very much similar to my childhood experience. Mm-hmm. But I mean, both like at the time and now didn't have any like negative experience with it. We lived in an ashram that's still there in the Bay Area called the Siddha Yoga Dham Foundation. That's the name of the organization. And it was like a really safe place to be a kid because it was a compound, essentially, even though it was in the city. So, you know, you're a kid, you could run around like crazy and, you know, because you knew all the adults, the parents all knew each other. You know, you had a lot of autonomy. You had a lot of independence. Like you had a certain responsibility. You had to do chores like you wouldn't, you know, at home too. But, you know, if you weren't doing homework or doing chores, you were just like hiding in cubbyholes and playing with the other kids and, you know, stealing candy. It was like very enjoyable. I mean, I was very aware I was not like other kids.
Right.
I was just thinking as you said all that, like we're so informed of our reality and our perception of what things are that a lot of times we don't know that other people don't have the same setup and they don't have the same background and their parents are different. It's, you know, it's a lot of people, myself included, it really doesn't hit you for maybe high school where you start going to school with people that exist on different income levels.
Right,
you're like,
Oh,
the world is filled with different people.
Oh, not everybody drinks their juice out of empty jelly jars.
Exactly. Yeah.
That was a major realization for me.
Oh my God. Yes. You're like, wait, is not everybody, is everybody's China not just like three in mismatched plates and 17 grape
jelly
jars?
Some from the grocery store, the bank that you got, like from signing up.
if I had lived on a ashram, like in the country, I think you're right. I would have had a much more kind of life. But what the problem was, or the challenge was, that my parents were very much like, you know, I mean, poor, working class. But I was so annoying. I was a gifted kid, so like I went to like a much nicer school than we could afford. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So I was like, got into the good school, and so I was very aware that, like, you know, because I'd go to school with like, you know, a tofu sandwich. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like an apple.
Yes.
And the other kids would have like Twinkies and Jello and, you know, ding dongs. And I was beggar. I was literally a beggar. Like, do you remember you'd like trade? Like, I've got bologna, you've got peanut butter and jelly. I would be like, I have nothing.
Percent.
What can you discard? That was,
what can I just have?
I will take your rejecta. Whatever you are not consuming, I will consume on your behalf. So, and then I didn't have a television. So I didn't have any of the kind of the cultural touch points of like shows that I watched, you know, I was a reader. I was like a really voracious reader.
Yeah.
The technical term is there's the colloquial term, which is nerd. And then the more technical term of pariah. You can choose whichever one you like.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a really nerdy kid.
But it is funny to like look back as you become an adult and someone's like, oh yeah, when someone tells me they were a nerd in school, my brain just goes, they were informed. They were more informed than
they were a reader.
They looked into stuff. They read things.
They were curious.
Yes, they were curious. They challenged things.
Exactly. And they all go on to be very successful usually.
They're all doing fine.
Yeah, or like have a good life. Yeah,
why is it so
made fun of? Like,
I say that like a lot of times when parents like come up to me and they've got like nerdy kids, because I talk a lot about being a really very socially isolated as a kid. And I always go like, weird kids make iconoclastic adults, man. Like, I think about every popular kid, especially when I was in high school, every super cool popular kid. And, you know, I hope they don't take this personally, but they washed out completely.
They should. They should take it personally.
They should. You losers.
They should.
Because like, if you're just super hot and it's super easy for you to get on in your life, you just don't develop any tools for dealing with adversity. Right.
Yeah.
And so then when you get out into the real world and like being like a hot jock isn't enough to like qualify you for life. Like, those people really founder. And like, most of the people that I went to high school with that were like super popular in high school, like, you know, not that there's anything wrong with this. I mean, obviously I would never do it, but just got like had kids like right away, you know, like all of us, just like everything just like all collapsed around them, you know, because they just didn't have the tools to deal with people saying no, because they'd never heard it. Whereas like, no was like the opera theme of my entire childhood. So I was very well prepared for stand-up, you know, because I was just used to rejection.
Yeah. What was your, if you don't mind my asking, when you said you were a gifted kid, what was like the gift? You were just very smart.
I was just super bookish. Like, I was just like a hardcore apple polisher. I mean, you know, like, I used to be the kind of kid that would like, after it was time for bed, like I'd read under the covers with a flashlight until like 3 or 4 in the morning. I'd read on the bus so long that I'd miss my stop and end up at like the terminal at the end of the thing. I'd read walking down the street and I'd fall down. My dad had a motorcycle and he had to build a special harness to hold me on to him because I would read on his back. And then I would like tip off. I was obsessed with books.
Yeah.
And then my mom would take me to the library on Saturday and I would just spend the whole day at the library just hanging out, not doing homework, just looking at books and reading books. And my favorite books for a very extended period of time were pathology books. So I'd go to like the science section and look at like goiters and tumors and homunculi.
Okay, let me
guys,
back up.
When I say nerd, I am not, this is not a joke, all right? I'm not fucking with you. This is real shit. I would look
I'm
at
I'm getting
like,
rid of nerd. You were just fucking smart.
Smart,
super
genius
you were
level.
Like, you know, when I sometimes theorize in my mind, like all of the different fantasies of, well, what potentially happens if we, when we die, if let's say something does happen, you're one of those people that like you get to reincarnate, you go back into your life, but you get to remember everything.
Wouldn't that be
so you're
great?
Already
yeah.
so ahead of
it. So, because I got a lot of scars. I got a lot of scars. It'd be great if I could just hold on to whatever knowledge I learned from all these injuries.
I also love the image of your dad as this, you know, very hippie pot smoking, but like motorcycle. Like there's some
dad,
clashing in here
if
that
people
I love.
People out there listening want to envision my dad. Okay,
yeah.
He is Action Jackson.
Okay.
On a yes. black ninja motor, like Kawasaki ninja motorcycle, with like yes. a black helmet, leather, but then also smokes joints. My dad is like legitimately the coolest guy ever, right? He's still
if
like.
If you
that.
Hadn't mentioned stepmom earlier, I'd ask if he were single. Because
I mean,
he sounds.
Everybody
amazing.
Loves my dad. Everyone's like, "Where's your dad?" I'm like, "Get away from me with that bullshit."
Yeah.
What's his name?
His name is Jim. James Tyler Jim.
I picture your dad taking that helmet off and the joint is already in his mouth.
In his mouth and he's smoking it perfectly, unmolested. It's a fatty and it's unbent.
And his little girl's on the back with a pathology book.
And
like,
Goiters. I'd like to explain homunculi to you.
Yeah.
They are
yeah.
typically just hair and teeth, but sometimes an entire separate
like,
human
sweetheart.
Has formed inside the... Like,
sweetheart, I am so baked right now. Yeah. I am slammed. I cannot handle what
Here's
you're saying.
I have 1,000... Because my dad raised me. My parents separated when I was 10. And my dad mm-hmm. raised me as a single dad. So here's a very good story about my dad. And there's 1,000 of them. I did smoke for a little while in the eighth grade when I was starting to be cool.
Cigarettes right? or are you getting into pot?
Both.
Okay, yeah.
And you know, this is my first foray into having like a friend group. Okay. And I was really trying to be cool.
Were you guys still on the ashram or had you moved out of there when your parents divorced?
No, we moved out of that at that point. They were divorced and I was living, so I was 13 years old. So I was living in San Francisco. And this is like when I first formed like my first like lifelong friends. Mm-hmm. And I was still like, oh my God, I was getting incredibly hazed at this school. Like I was just really like crazy because it was my first public school. I went to public school for 1 year in eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And I was just like 8 feet taller than all the other kids and like just a total fucking weirdo. And so I would just get hounded in the hallways. And then once these kids were trying to beat me up.
What?
Yeah. Oh God, guys, like I had an after.
Who goes after an 8 foot tall woman?
But you know, when she's shrinking and she's got her nose in a book, you know, and people are threatened by things they don't understand, you know,
yes,
you know, exhibit A, the president. So so these kids were trying to beat me up. And then this really nice guy like stuck up for me and he became my first like real friend. And then he's been my best friend of my whole life. I was the best man in his wedding.
Still to this day?
Still to this day, one of my greatest friends.
I love that. Yeah, that is so movie-esque.
Yeah, it is. Like, our whole life. Yeah, I was a groomsman in his wedding. He was the best man in my wedding. So, these are like cool kids and they smoke, they listen to heavy metal. So I was hanging out with like the metal stoner kids. So
you were doing it right. Oh,
I really, that. Eighth grade, I killed it in eighth grade. I got like one good year before I went back, it disappeared back into my homunculi and goiters. and my dad figured out I was smoking and he told me to stop. And I said I would stop. And I insisted that I did stop. And I pulled all the things you pull. You're like, Mom, someone was just smoking by me. Dad, someone spilled the beer on me. And I smell like beer because someone spilled it on me. And I was at West Portal Station, for people who are in San Francisco, smoking with my friends. And my friend Neil goes, dude, there's your dad. And I had a cigarette like it up to my lip.
God, that just made my stomach drop.
And my dad was just, it was just like, imagine it's just like a black motorcycle and a black man with a black helmet.
And like, AC/DC is just back in black.
Metallica. We're listening to Metallica. yes. Like, and he's got binoculars like stuck into the visor hole. And he's watching you.
No, he does not.
But my dad used to follow me around in his motorcycle.
That's
like,
a fucking dad. That's just a classic
Jim
dad.
Tyler.
Such hardcore dad energy out of my father.
There
were no lies in my house. Like there was just no way to get away with anything with my father. He knew everything. He knew it.
Did he approach
there.
You though? Did he approach you or was it like when you get
I
home?
I think I just saw him and I went like, I went, oh.
You ate the cigarette.
Yeah.
And from a distance, you just saw him oozing disappointment.
It was just so disgusting.
Yeah.
Just spent so much of my childhood disgusted with me.
God, I love that. Yeah. I love a dad that just to even has the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. He's like the Terminator. Like he worked, he was in construction. So he'd get up at 3, he'd be at work at like 4. He'd come home at like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. He'd be exhausted. But somehow, you know, whenever I was doing dirt, my dad was across the street.
Yeah, he knew where you were.
I love it.
Like T2 fucking thousand, man. Just waiting for me to fuck up.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
When you said that when your parents split and you were raised by your dad, how did that like come to be? Was that like whenever I see that in a TV show or a movie where like the kid is like given the choice, I'm always like even just saying it out loud now, my palms are like sweating because of the stressful anxiety of what that even is. But is that what you went through? Was like, where would you like to stay, or how did that happen?
I have this joke that like, you know, it's only white people that like kick the kids back and forth. You know what I mean? And fight like black people are just poor. It's not even white people. It's just rich people. Poor people are like, okay, how the fuck are we going to work this out? No one has any money. How the fuck do we do this? And that what do we do?
Yeah.
And that was it. It was like my mom, like, you know, my parents didn't have money. My father could not afford child support. My mom was working. My dad was working. It was insane. There was no like fighting over money. There was no money.
Right.
So, you know, they decided they were each going to take one kid. And, you know, my father was, which one can care for itself? And that was me because I was the older one. And my mom was the younger one.
That feels like so much high anxiety for everyone involved. Like, oh my God, like that's...
It's so funny. Like, I don't know that I was anxious about it at all. Like, I...
Yeah, okay.
I mean, like, I'm really thinking back and like, you know what? Like, injuries fade over time. But I just remember like... My parents were like really forthcoming people. They're like, this is the deal. We really love each other. We can't figure it out. We're going to break up. I remember being like, oh yeah, they gave it a try. I remember being very clear. I was like, oh, they gave it the old college try.
It's very mature. I think it's the mature. It's just the truth. Yeah.
That's the truth. We really love each other. We don't want to be together anymore. We're always going to love you guys. We can't afford to take both of you. And so, you know, your dad, you know, he's a guy and, you know, he's a great guy, but he probably needs the one that can like make its own sandwiches. So
because you'd probably have to like get yourself ready for school in the morning if your dad's leaving at 3 or 4 in the morning, right?
Exactly.
That's the most dad statement that's ever been said on this show. Is like, look, who can kind of do their own thing?
Who can make their own sandwiches and like can figure out how to do their own homework? And that was me. But later, you know, what was great was like, I interviewed my dad for my podcast years ago, Girl on Guy, which is retired, but you can still find it on the internet. And I asked him a lot about it. And he really... You know, it's so great to finally see your parents as people.
Yes.
Oh, that's
like,
so true.
He told so many great stories about being a parent. Because, you know, he was always really loving, but he was also like a little, you know, kind of a little, not remote. He was my father, right? So he had like an imperious quality to him. And it was so interesting to hear how vulnerable he felt as a single father, like how frightened he was. And how worried he was about making mistakes. But he said, like, he really needed me. He said, you know, like, I probably would have just been, like, partying all the time. I mean, I was, like, newly single. I would have been, like, totally, like, you know, running around like a maniac, which I get now that I'm, you know, older than he was when he took me because I run around like a maniac all the time. You know what I mean? I don't have any kids, so But you know what I mean?
How old is he at the time of, like, it being just you and him now?
I think that my dad was probably, like, maybe 35 or...
Oh, yeah.
So, like, you know, 35.
He's so young.
Like, young. Like, super young, right? So, like, of course he would have been running around like a crazy person. Yeah. And he's like, you grounded me and you gave me, like, structure and it became really... Like, things that were important to me kind of generally became really specifically important to me in terms of my relationship with you.
Yeah.
He's like, you really saved me. You helped me figure out my life because I had to be available for you. And that was something that I never thought about back then at all. You know, it just...
Yeah.
my dad was either perfect or he wasn't giving me enough money.
Or he was stalking you to see if you're smoking cigarettes. Or he was creeping
around like T2000. Yeah, totally. Terrifying.
He's still always just watching you from a distance, 100 yards.
He's outside right now.
Yeah. I love that because I mean, not only is there such an honesty in that, but what I have a five-year-old daughter and I know exactly is not the right word, but I know where that sentiment comes from of how you grow and change and find structure from someone who's so much younger, where we don't grow up to think that we can impart wisdom from people who are younger than us. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we live in a society where we don't think we can gain wisdom from someone who's 5 years younger than mm-hmm. us. That's how our brains are. I think it's why our country is the way it is. We don't open our eyes to
people
younger
aren't
ideas.
Curious,
I mean, look who's running for president.
Oh my God, yeah. Seriously. It's like, we're not curious about other people and we're just so confident in our own point of view that we'll reject even like evidentiary information in favor of like reinforcing our own worldview. And I think that's why, you know, like bipartisanship has died and we're so combative because like people can't tolerate cognitive dissonance, right? So like I believe something and then you present me with evidence that like refutes that belief. And instead of just being like, huh, oh shit, maybe I should like learn a little bit more about this. Maybe I should be open-minded. We just go, well, fuck you and fuck your ideas. I'm right.
Yeah, and I'm older. We always
retrench. We retrench.
Well, everyone's like so uncomfortable to be wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Like to just admit like, oh, I was actually wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have to sit with that. You have to sit
in
that moment.
It's such a lack
and be like,
of maturity, right?
Well, we live in a country where we're so afraid to give the car keys to younger people. And when I say younger people, I'm talking about 50-year-olds. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, oh, that guy, he's only 44. What if, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, I think that like the thing I'm learning as I get older, I don't know if you guys are noticing this, is like, well, first of all, I like myself more maybe because I have to stop giving a shit. But also, like I really do know how to do things better than I did when I was younger. Do you know what I mean? Like without I know best, I'm just like, oh God, this is so much easier now than it used to be. And it's just because I've lived a long time and I've made a million mistakes. Right.
Yeah, and like,
so I'm just like, I'm not afraid to make mistakes again, but most people are so terrified of looking wrong that they'll just either not try something because of a fear of failure, or even when they fail, they, like you said, they won't admit when they're wrong, which I think like the mark of maturity has been like, well, I fucked that shit up.
Yes.
But I'm going to learn and I'm going to do it better next time. It's like, we just get the first part and no one wants to do the second.
Yeah. Admitting you're wrong and being wrong is the most relatable thing. No one understands the person who's always right because it's so insanely ridiculous.
Because it doesn't exist. I mean, this president is a perfect example, right? He just he say what the fuck he wants all the time. And he'll say something completely different than the thing he said the day before. And he insists both things are true. But it's all the people that keep buying like a new bag of shit from him every single day that I really worry about. Not in a dismissive way. Like, they're just normal people trying to live their lives. I'm like, but like, how are you just like buying like a different line from this guy every day without questioning it? And what does that say about you and your own worldview that it's so
in your
flimsy?
Whole life.
Yes. And your own brain.
Yeah. Like, think for yourself, you know?
Age of Aquarius, dude. We're entering into that age of honesty,
my parents
truth,
would love
information.
This shit from you. Mercury in retrograde. Something about
Mercury is in
retrograde for about a decade.
It's all, that's, whenever someone's wrong, someone's like, Mercury's in retrograde. It's like, shut the fuck. That's just where it lives.
Fucking spell check, bitch. Don't play Mercury. Reread your fucking essay.
Leave Mercury alone.
You signed a bad lease.
Yeah, it's not the planet's fault. You're lackadaisical.
Right.
Going back to what you're saying of like mistakes and stuff, I think that world of stand-up comedy really teaches you that, because there's no way to... There is no path to being a successful comic without horrifically embarrassing and failing so many times to the point where it can't touch you anymore.
Yeah.
And then you can do it. And then you're like, oh, this crowd doesn't like me. Well, then I will fucking rip them apart.
And then they'll like you.
And then they like you because they can't touch you. And they don't even know, they don't even understand that collectively they are touching, they are kind of bothering you.
I feel like you encapsulated stand-up perfectly. Like that, like I say that a lot. I like whenever like maybe comics would ask me about it. And then like I wrote a whole book about failure called Self-Inflicted Wounds that was literally about what you said, which is that the path to greatness, it's through failure. Like you have to fail. You have to embrace it like aggressively. Yeah. And you know, that success is not the absence of failure, but persistence through failure. But I don't think it's, you know, I mean, I think that applies like in any endeavor, but I think in stand-up more than anything, like you cannot get funny. if you are not bombing. Like bombing,
yeah.
You, there's just no way to become like truly confident and truly self-aware as a comic without just like literally perishing over and over on stage until, like you said, you're bulletproof. But even more than that, like you realize that like even in failure, like you have control over how you react. And also eventually you realize you have control over how the audience reacts. It's only when you fear them that you lose control of an audience.
Because they sense it.
Yeah, yeah. And you sense it. I mean, you start to, even if you don't know, you start to, there start to be these like subtle physical and visual cues that indicate to them that you're out of control.
Yeah.
Did you start in San Francisco?
I did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which was a great place to start at the time. I can't really speak to the culture there now, but like it was a really good place. I mean, it was really tough. It was a really tough city.
Oh my God.
Really, really hard.
I mean, it's San Francisco and New York City and Boston. I feel like those three, and then for other stuff, Chicago, but like definitely San Francisco and that boom of
murder. It was just so hard to get any stage time there. It was just, I mean, it was so it was so gatekeepy and it was so competitive. And also it was very, you know, hipstery, like really like one kind of comedy work there. And anybody who was outside of that framework was like really looked down upon, which was fine. Like it was what it was. But I remember like there were all those sad kind of open mics and like weird places. And there was one at this washing mat called laundromat called Brainwash.
Is this the one Patton started or like used to like
everybody like that? That's my class. Like
I love that we call it a class. I say that to so many people and they don't understand it, but it's like, no, it's like school where you, like you kind of came up with a class and that's your crew, and for the rest of your lives you feel this bond because you went through the shit at the same time.
Did you go to high school with Patton? No.
it's kind of like that though. Comedy school,
totally.
Did your dad ever come to shows? Like, was that ever like a, hey, I'm starting to do this. Do you want to see what this looks
was
like?
Was he surprised too? Because you were so bookish and like into like school. So
his perspective. He was probably like,
I thought she was going to become like a scientist.
Another
anthropologist.
Another item in a long litany of deeply disappointing choices that I've made.
My parents
like, we sacrificed for this bullshit.
I'm sorry. You're making booze and you're giving speeches. Fuck.
I'm here. So you've decided to be a clown. Is that it? A clown?
Yeah.
My father and my mother came to a very early set of mine at the Punchline in San Francisco. And it was my first big booked set there. It took me forever to get onto that stage. And I invited them. And I literally had like Jan on the quiz show kind of moment where she freezes when she sees the red light. I could see my mother's glasses like reflecting in, it was like a drawing from a Watchmen comic. I could just see the lenses like shining out of the darkness. And I completely froze. And I had like, you know, like it wasn't even a bad set. It was like a non-set. Like I couldn't finish. And so then for years, my parents were banned from my stand-up shows. In fact, anyone I knew was banned from my stand-up shows because it just killed me.
Yeah.
And I was like a baseball player back then. Like I had lucky socks and I had a lucky shirt. I had to eat this before the set and all that stuff. So it took a long time before I would allow my parents to come see me again. And I think the second time my father came to see me might have been when I was doing the San Francisco Comedy Competition. I think his comment was something like, well, you're going to have to get a whole lot funnier to keep up with these guys.
Aren't dads? There's something about it where you're like, well, fuck you. But then as you get older, you're like, you know what? Right, good for you. Right.
Reasonable bullshit. You're not bullshitting. Is he funny? Is your dad funny?
Oh my God, my dad is so fucking hilarious.
Is he like one-liners or imitations?
My father is like the most naturally funny person in the entire world. And he's the guy that will like tear off the tablecloth at a dinner party and like leap up to tell a story. And his stories are all incredibly filthy. I you know, there's so many of them, but there was...
I don't know if it's the booze, but I'm falling in love with your dad.
See, I'm literally like, I'm telling you, Aisha, I wish you were single. I'm sure your stepmom is wonderful.
I'm going to call your dad
tonight.
She's a delight,
but I understand. A lot of people are falling
into motorcycle, joints, comedy, ripping tablecloth. Jim, Tyler, goddamn.
Guys, Jim. Jim lives it up.
Yeah. He goes... There's so many stories, but I don't even remember the exact setup, but my father was a construction worker for most of my life. And at one point they were working on a job site where there, do you remember that there was like an endangered owl that was like back in like the 90s, I think there was like some endangered owl, like a snowy owl or a spotted owl that was like endangered in California. And there was some kind of restriction on the site. And there's a lot, there's like construction sites are like hell holes, right? It's just like toxic masculinity, like on fleek. And, you know, everybody's just like walking around trying to slap each other in the face with their dicks. Right. And it's also incredibly racist. I mean, you know, like people like, you know, and it was just like, it was the worst.
I just like the dick slapping. Dick. Just some dick slaps.
If you weren't getting slapped in the face with a random dick, someone was calling you a name.
I want two TV shows from this podcast. Yeah, one of you and your dad growing up and one of slapping dicks in faces at a construction site.
Exactly.
And we're working on a development thing right now.
You're just sitting down to eat your nice bologna sandwich and pop, you get smacked in the face with a dick. And then you go back to your car, you know, because you want to eat a piece and someone's dropped a cinder block of your windshield. Yeah. I mean, they're just like treacherous places.
Yeah.
But they got in a fight about on the website and the foreman was like yelling at my dad about something and it somehow the spotted owl came up and my father, this is not even as funny as I think it is, but it's just, this is my father to a T, goes, you know what? I'll fuck the spotted owl and I'll fuck you too. That's like a classic line from my dad.
He's just trying to show, like, look, I'm crazy. Endangered or not, I don't give a fuck.
I was slapped and slotted dicks in the face with my dick, spotted owl in the face of my dick. I'm going to slap you in the face of my dick. I will say that one interesting thing that happened when I was a kid was my father, who had always been just like a laborer when I was in the, I feel like when I was in the eighth grade, but it must have been later, it must have been in high school. He went back to become an operating engineer. And which is like a pretty, you know, my dad is a really smart guy, but like grew up in Pittsburgh, very poor and only finished the eighth grade. So he's just one of those people that just is like naturally
started
really
working like right away.
Smart. Yeah. Started working, had to work to support his family. Yeah. His father died like when he was really young in a military related death that I actually don't really know much about. And so it was just my dad and four sisters and his mom. And so he started working in high school.
Wow.
And so when he finally went back to get this certificate so that he could be a crane operator, it was all math. I mean, it was just incredibly, you know, complex geometry. And so one of the most important parts of my childhood was like helping my dad with his math homework.
Yeah.
Which I did for the whole time that he was in this program.
I'm telling you, Aisha, I want this to be a show. A TV
it is.
Show.
This is a show.
It is. I want this to be a show. Like you helping your dad with his math homework.
It was one of the best times of my life, you know, because my dad had always been taking care of me. It was really lovely to do that with him.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
What do you think was that catalyst of your dad going from like that blue collar Pittsburgh life, which always just, I have such a specific image in my head, probably just from playing in Pittsburgh, but that very specific blue collar image. And then like getting into that more hippie lifestyle, like to take that plunge. God, I'm really falling in love with Jim today.
Jim is pretty special.
I'm telling
what
you.
Was that turning point, do you think? Has he ever said that?
I think he was just a bohemian soul, right? Like, you know, when he was young, like after, like when he was around 18, one of his sisters had moved from Pittsburgh to DC and he just wanted to explore the world. So he moved there too. And he was always, very artistic. He was a photographer. So he was, this was during the, you know, we've had a lot of civil rights movements, but during our first great civil rights
movement, they're ongoing.
We're in the middle of our second. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right.
And he was filming taking photos of all of these protests and like, these organizers. And my mom was a member of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. So he was, that's how he met her. He was shooting these meetings between civil rights activists and like the Klan. And he was taking photos of these summits that were happening back then. And that's how we met my mom. She was a student at Howard University and she was an organizer and a freedom writer. And I think that like, you know, she was even more of a Bobo than he was, you know, and they came together and were both just very bohemian spirits and then got married and moved to California. So, you know, that classic amazing. Kind of, and I think that's the thing, right, about curiosity. Like you don't right. have to have had an interesting experience to want an interesting experience. And I sure. think we mm-hmm. continually paint people with the brush of where they're from rather than the brush of like where they want to go. And I think that like the idea of saying to yourself and others, like, I don't know everything. I want to learn more about the world. I'm open. Is really self-defining versus what we hear a lot of people say, which is like, I know everything. I've experienced everything I need yes. to experience. I'm fully baked. I mean, I want to be figuring shit out for the rest of my life. And I'm fully yeah. willing yeah. to admit that I shit the bed on a regular basis. And then I typically fling it at somebody and blame them. But I, you know, like that you're open, you know, that you're open to, right. know, to admitting that you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Which I think is a really like a like lost right now in modern culture, you know?
Oh, I agree so much. Cause I think it's also that it's not just maturity. It's something, it's something else. It's like deeply embedded in the soul to actually be like, this isn't where this, my heart, my soul is not here. It's not in this lifestyle. It's not in this thing. I am someone else. And I'm willing to take that leap to go try something completely different. I think yeah. when you see someone go from, you know, for instance, your dad going from blue collar, working class Pittsburgh, which I feel like is just
very
definition very, yeah. of that, you know? And then going from that and being like, oh, my heart is not here. I'm trying this artistic endeavor. And then I'm ending up in this completely opposite lifestyle somewhere else. I think there's actually a lot of courage in that because I think a lot of people have that in them, that their heart isn't where they should be, but yet they don't have the confidence or the courage or the means. You know, some mm-hmm. people just aren't given the means to do it, mm-hmm. to take that leap to go, oh, I think my actual soul and my actual life is somewhere else,
yeah. Or I don't know where it is, but I'm going to get out here and try to...
I'm going to look for it.
Yeah.
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 And being okay with that you don't know.
Right. Yeah. yeah.
That, I think it goes yeah. back to what we were saying too about people wanting to be right all the time. Like being okay with saying like, I just don't know who I am yet. And maybe that's evolving our whole lives.
You know, that's the thing, Chrissy. So. Like, don't you think, yeah. like, right. I think the worst thing I think that's what's exciting about like who my father is now, who both of my parents are now really, but who is yeah. that like they continue to be open to new things. But I always think about like the worst thing, the worst thing would be to wake up one day and be like, not curious about anything at all. And be like, yeah, I'm terrified of that. Like just being like, you know,
same. And I think it like keeps you forever young as well. Like mm-hmm. you're constantly curious and just the minute that I wake up and I don't care about anything else, I'm like, oh, I'm an old lady.
You did it. Right? Like, you went over the edge.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. yeah. It just keeps you young and keeps life exciting.
Both of my parents are they're like very open. And I think that's what has kept them like really, they're both very kind of young for their age. My mm-hmm. mom, even though this is a show about dads, my mom just moved to LA a little while ago and she's hilarious. And they're both, my parents.
I love that both your parents are funny. I love that.
Yeah. They're both hilarious yeah. in their own way. My mother's much more acerbic. My father is just like, he's the performative one. But
right.
my mom has a full sleeve tattoo that she just finished a couple of years ago.
Oh, yes.
Wait, how old is she?
She's 75.
Well, I was like, well, you don't have to say her
age. 75. She don't mind. She's, yeah. she's 75.
full sleeve full tattoo. Sleeve That's tattoo? The best.
So I'm like, she has a sleeve. I'm like, oh, she got when she was a kid. I'm like, no, bitch, she finished it last year. She just got yeah. finished
Fresh
last year.
Ink.
It's fresh. And yeah. I took her to my tattoo shop because she wanted to get another tattoo. I was getting a tattoo and she wanted to get another one. And we were hanging out there and drinking a Guinness.
Yes. Like, God, I love all this.
My mom and I were drinking a Guinness.
I have so much jealousy brewing
inside. Oh, my mom is available. Yeah. yeah, she's awesome. Yeah. So we're in there, we're drinking pints of Guinness. And then my mom gets her first tattoo and she goes, well, you know, I'm here. I might as well get this other one. So my mom gets two tattoos in one day.
Hold on. Hold on. How old is she when this happens?
74.
No. See, that's what I love. 74. The fuck,
I love
and
it.
Already in a year, she has a sleeve. But at 74, yeah. You go, why don't I just get the other one? It's like, yeah, of course.
She's
what are you waiting
she's
on?
Like, I'm here. We might as well just get the other one now. Right now.
What are you waiting
so
on?
She gets, so this, her left arm is a full sleeve all the way down in the hand. Her right arm, she gets like her Buddhist name in kanji, but like her whole arm, like her whole upper arm is like giant kanji. And then she gets this giant neck tattoo. And the tattoo shop that I go to is almost all men. And they're kind of like, dude, your mom's insane, bro.
So hardcore.
She's so hardcore. Like literally, they were like, they couldn't believe it. So, you know, I mean, I think that curiosity is like so, and like, I think people would be like, well, she's so, why is she doing them now? I'm like, what's she saving it for now? Like now,
yeah,
time,
what do you
right?
mean now?
Like,
why not
smoke
now?
Them if you fucking she, got them, kid.
She moved to LA and she got a sleeve of tattoos.
She's on fire.
Honestly, I'm also kind of scared.
I mean, don't fuck with her. Both of my parents, this is the best. My dad is like the guy, like, he used to, taking it back to my dad. My dad is also the guy that until he was like in his 60s would break up fights. Like he'd break up fights between neighbor kids, you know, he'd like intervene and stuff. He was like the mayor. He's always been the mayor of the neighborhood. And then at one point he's like, okay, look, first of all, I'm getting too old to do this. But first of all, you never do this. Cause typically when you break up a fight, they both turn on you and beat the shit out of you. But my dad is like big and imposing. So he was never really worried about it.
Jim.
And he was always breaking up. Jim adds value, guys. Jim always adds value.
Both
Jim
parents
breaks
are
up
legends.
Just a peacekeeper.
just stepping in, guys. We can talk this out.
And also keep in mind, he's stepping and breaking up fights super fucking high. He is
very
high.
Yeah, he's like super stoned. So he can't even feel it if he hit him, right? He's
delayed reaction.
He's like juggernaut. He feels nothing.
He's got Pink Floyd going on fucking repeat in his
mind.
He's
an equalizer because it's just kind of
like, it's easy, guys. Why is everybody so upset?
Hey, guys, here's a joint. Like, oh, you know what? He's right.
He's always right.
Let's just talk. Why don't we talk about it?
I try to think of like when he stopped. I don't know why I brought that up, but when he stopped breaking up fights. Oh, it was probably like it probably was his 60s. But one of the last fights he broke up was like a guy being mean to his girlfriend, hitting his girlfriend.
Mm. Oh,
and he came out and he told the guy to be off. And the guy took a swing at my dad and he connected. And then my dad literally, he is juggernaut. He like just hit this guy with like this kind of, you know, like this giant barrel of a fist. And like, just like, you know, and the guy was young, like he was 25. I was like, come on, old man. The guy was like, dropped the kid to the ground. And then he got home and he's like, you know, should probably stop doing that. The next kid might just not like take a missed swing. Like it might be more serious.
Yeah.
He doesn't do it anymore.
Oh, but I love that so much.
Yeah. He was.
Well, there's no, I mean, you see someone, when it's a man and a woman, it's like, if you don't
you can't
live with yourself.
No.
You're just like, oh, and I ran to the car.
Yeah. Then
I just like, oh, did you?
I dialed 911 as I was walking.
And I left and I went home and had a milkshake. Was it all right?
Something tells me your dad will be doing that well into his 90s.
Oh, yeah. he's got a baseball bat in the trunk. You know what I mean? Just if anything pops off, dad's
he's just pivoted. He's like, all right, you know what? What am I doing without a weapon?
The upshot of this podcast is don't fuck with Jim Tyler.
Don't fuck with Jim. That's the name of this podcast.
That's the title of this episode.
Don't fuck with Jim Tyler. He's got a crowbar and a bat. But like a bat with like spikes in it. Like he's old school prepared.
We make a superhero poster for him.
Confirm or deny. But I will say, this is what led me to know. So he came down to LA like 3 or 4 years ago for the premiere of my first feature that I directed. It was so cute. And, you know, he just loves people. He's in his element. He can tell stories to everybody. Everybody loves my dad. So we're talking for a while and he says, I've got to go. They're waiting for me. I'm like, who's waiting? He's like, my audience. I'm like, they're my audience, dad. This is my party. This is not your party, dad.
He goes up and does time before the film starts.
Just a tight five that he's been working on for a while.
I know you guys are going to watch the movie, but I know you're here for me. And
tell you a little bit about my kid.
You've done so many things. Has there ever been a point in your dad's life? Has he ever like sat down? Like, have you seen it in his eyes where he's like, what the fuck is your... like, I can't believe I am 50% responsible for the creation of you. And then this is what you went and did with it. Like, it's bizarre. Is he that kind of person? Is crazy that, like, hey, let me open up and tell you. And the only reason I asked is because of the hippie thing. I feel like,
yeah,
you know, they're more vulnerable. I feel like, and I don't know that I'm a hippie, but I definitely lean that way right. when it comes to vulnerability. And I just wonder, like, is it, do you have that kind of relationship with him where he's like, Asia, you know, what the fuck are you doing?
You know what's so weird is, like, I don't, we've never had precisely that conversation.
Yeah.
And, So there are two answers to that, or three. The first is that we never had precisely that conversation. I work really hard to try to, like, make myself available to him.
Yeah.
I feel like he was so available to me when I was young, and that's like, it's, and I'm, you know, busy now. And so, like, I'm really working hard, especially because he's in his 70s, to, like, just be kind of like, just show up at my dad's and, like, sit in the backyard and, you know, eat enchiladas,
percent.
Right? Just, like, be yeah. available to my dad.
Yes.
But we never really talk about that stuff. We just kind of hang out, and where I'm getting, like, the casual time I had with my dad, you know, like 30 years ago. And I'm trying yeah. to have that again.
And also, side note, these are chicken enchiladas from her company. She yeah. makes
yes,
chicken enchiladas.
Adobo
yeah.
and stone.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd buy it.
I do think that he sees that, like, my peripatetic nature comes from his, like, he's always a real, like, a worker and a hustler. And, you know, he yeah. was, and I think he knows that I've gotten his work ethic. And whenever he says congratulations, I always make a point of saying, like, you know, I'm this way because of you. I yeah. learned it
yes.
from you. Cause he says, like, God, you're such a hustler. You're such a worker. I'm like, Dad, like, I got this ethic, work ethic from you. Like, this is why yeah. I'm this way.
Yeah.
Cause I think sometimes also when you're a parent, I'm not a parent, but I hear this from my mom right. more, because she's a little bit more divulgent like about her inner life, that, like, she's sure. like, I made a lot of mistakes. I'm like, you made no mistakes. Like, you were a human being. You love the shit out of us. You got it done. I don't really nurse, like, a lot. You know, I don't nurse any resentments.
Yeah.
And so it's important to me to remind my parents, like, oh, like, you're looking back and picking all the things that you think you did wrong. I'm just here to remind you about everything that you did right. You know?
Yeah.
Were you always like that? Did you get to a certain point, were you ever angry with them?
And, oh, I'm furious with my father. So pissed.
Because I love that.
I'm
hearing you say that right now, and I'm like, I gotta write these notes down and then call my parents and apologize.
I gotta call my dad
and,
right now.
I gotta call my dad. I gotta call my mom and be like, I'm sorry, you guys were just human
I'm
beings.
So
I'm really sorry.
I know you were doing the best you could.
I'm sorry. Like,
my mom is always like, oh,
I've been drinking old fashions all afternoon.
I'm super
I love
drunk.
You so
I'm
much.
I'm hanging out with Aisha Tyler all day. But I love you guys so much.
I can't hug you. That's why you know.
But you're just a human being. You're trying your best. I'm sorry, I'm such an asshole.
Yeah,
think about
I'm
it this
sorry.
Way. Like, think about, like, all the ink. Like, I was super mad at my dad. Like, I didn't speak to him for a while when I was in high school. You know, like, I felt like when I went away to college, like, the way that we, that, like, our, that relationship ended was, like, really painful for me. And, you know, I
yes.
think, like, yeah. I was mad at him that he wasn't more, like, loving about it. Like, you know, he made me sell my fucking car. I was so pissed off yeah. at him, you know, like, I was pissed.
Yeah.
And then I just remember one day, like, being around a friend of mine who, like, maybe had lost their dad, or the dad was really sick. And I just said, shit, if my dad fucking dies, and, like, yeah. this is where it ends, like, I'm going to really regret it. And
yeah.
and I just decided to forgive him for the stuff I was pissing him about. And what I realized then, which is something I really believe in now, it's just like, look, if you've got stuff to work out, like, it's important to work it out. But for the yes. most part, being angry with someone is just really like sitting in your own poison all day long,
yes,
right? And
100%.
Your parents are just people, and you don't realize that until you're their age and you go, oh shit, they were, like, caring for a person. I haven't put on pants in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm mad at them that they fucked up a little bit. Like, dude,
yeah.
do you know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like
yeah,
I said,
but you hate pants.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
I
not
really
your...
fuck pants.
You gotta
fuck,
forgive
fuck
yourself.
Pants 2020 is really
yeah,
what,
seriously.
My hashtag for this year.
That's your
yeah.
that's your slogan
you
in 2024, fuck pants.
So
no,
like,
but that's so true though.
Like once you're their age when they were mm-hmm. when they were literally responsible for your life and you realize, like,
yeah.
how little you know, you just go, okay, like, you loved me. You did your best. You are a human
right.
being. I could,
yeah.
could relitigate this shit for the rest of our lives, or I could just put it down and we could move on, and I could have the time with you be something different than what it was before.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I decided to do that very young. And mm-hmm. then,
that is so, I mean, it's not surprising. You were reading books on the back of motorcycles.
Right.
The fact that you're reading books on the back of motorcycles, it's no surprise to me that you had that that very, like, intellectual fucking revelation that people don't have forever, but at a very young age to realize, like, ah, fuck, you just have to let that stuff go. and move on. There's people whose lifetimes they don't ever let it go.
But you also think you're letting them off the hook. You're not. You're letting yourself off the hook.
Yes.
You are freeing yourself from carrying around this bag of shit that you've been nursing your whole life, which I'm not even telling that your grievances aren't legitimate. I'm just saying, like, is this what you want to hold on to for the rest of your life? Now, if your parents were abusive or, you know, are cruel or remain that way, that's a different conversation. But if you're just pissed off that, like, you know, your dad made you sell your fucking mint ass Opal Manta, which was some bullshit.
Fuck Jim. Now I hate
Jim. And wanted room for all his motorcycles and my cars.
Now I'm 180 on Jim. It's like,
I know. I'm glad he has. I'm glad you have a stepmom. She sounds
great. She's
great. Lucky her. I'm not interested in him anymore.
But you know, that it's just like, it's just, you're just, you just decided that you're going to, what's the old saying? Like, drinking poison and hoping it kills the other person. You're just going to be sick the rest of your life. Like, put it down. Yeah.
You start to realize that no one really knows what they're doing. Because when you are a kid, you are like, oh, parents know the rules and parents know the process
and parents
know the thing. And then you go stay at a friend's house and you're like, oh, their parents are like that. They must know better. And then at a very young age, and I want to say probably around 5 or 6 or whenever you have your first sleepover and you see how other parents are, if you think they're doing better than what your parents are doing, you start to think your parents are fucking assholes and it festers and it festers. And then you get to high school and you're like, all these other parents are great. And then you hit like your 30s and you go, oh, fuck, no parents are great.
No parents are great.
The best parents are okay. They're okay. The best parents in the world are okay parents.
And also the parents who think they're awesome all universally suck ass.
Yeah.
All these parents running around thinking they've got it dialed are total fucking pricks. Don't talk to me about your weird fucking rules about gluten. My kids never come into your house. You're a creep.
Yes. As someone who has lost their father, I will say, to have that like recognition of knowing like, like whatever petty things people have in their mind of being like, well, I'm mad at my dad for like this thing. I now know from the other side of it that truly, no joke, once they are gone, you truly realize how meaningless any sort of confrontation or how meaningless any opposite opinions or how meaningless so many things are. And also a lot of people are in that position of going, yeah, I never told my dad ... So it actually is like great when you hear someone like yourself say, yeah, I have this relation with my dad because at an early age I realized what it was. I think a lot of people just don't realize what the relationship actually is. And once you realize what it is, it can become something really, really great and really meaningful. I'm gonna actually start to call Jim my dad. And
you can. He's got love enough for everybody. Really, honestly, I'm not a big enough audience for him.
We're coming for Thanksgiving. We'll all get tested.
You'll love it.
We'll get tested. We'll show up.
Yep.
I mean, I think like you made such a good point, Rory. Like I realized I was lucky that I realized like, okay, I'm just going to make sure I say the stuff to my dad that I need to say. And the rest of it, I'm going to let go. I guess I do wonder, like, are you a different father now because of like those realizations? Do you parent differently?
1,000,000%. I think when you have a kid, you sort of, it's so strange. Immediately you forgive your parents.
maybe not out loud.
Maybe not out loud. You can't show all your cards. I'm a comedian. I can't give it all away.
Keep a couple boys in the chamber. I get it.
Yeah, but there are elements of how it changes you as a parent to realize, you know, especially me as a dad, I know how fucked up dads are, and I have a daughter, and I'm so grateful that I have a daughter because I'm fully aware that they're just historically seems to be this better relationship of like dads with their daughters, because I think men are like, and it's no surprise, I think men actually know how to talk to women better than they know how to talk to men. I'm talking about evolved men,
right
know how to talk to men,
talk to each other.
Mm-hmm. Better than they know how to talk to each other because of that sort of alpha dynamic that fucks everything up, and it fucks up progress and so many things that when men talk to women, you're like, oh, that you seem like a different person. Like if I had a son, you know, you get into this traditional mindset of what you need to instill in them. With a daughter, I'm like, oh, that's
fish.
Not what we're about. We're about having a great fucking relationship, and it's and it's so great. But yeah, I carry a lot of that. I think that's just what time is. You start to realize you're just this link in this giant chain of people that just gets passed on, and whatever you do is just is what you do. And I think that's why, you know, if my, and I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass, but if my daughter in however much time from now is like, I have my own liquor brand, I'm going to be like, Jesus, that's fucking crazy. But then also, I'll know I'll never need to buy liquor again.
And that's really the thing. I'm going to give you, since you have a young daughter, I'm going to give you the advice of my dad. This feels like a nice parting shot that my dad would give me when I would leave the house from school. So my dad was like a big aphorism guy, like a big sayings guy. And he would always like give me these little sayings when I would leave. And one of his favorite ones was, keep your grades and your draws up. That was a favorite of my father.
So
he had a million of them. But I would leave, and I was going to leaving like the house to go to school. He would go, "Whose day is it?" And I would have to go, "It's my day." And then he'd go, "And what are you going to do?" And I have to go, "Grab it by the balls."
Yeah.
And then he'd go, "And then what are you going to do?" And I go, "And twist."
And look at you.
Yeah. So there you go. That is why I have my own
company. And look at you. Courage and stone.
We now
know what this means. Courage and stone. We now know.
Grab life by the balls and twist and twist.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. Yes, this was fucking so great.
It was a
blast. The fact that we got to drink, like you said.
We're now going to be doing this on every podcast. We'll just be pushing your brand for everyone. I'm just like, oh, thanks for doing this. Courage and Stone by Aisha Tyler. You guys had it yet?
Sorry, every episode.
Yeah.
We're never going outside again, guys. So we gotta make ourselves happy wherever we can.
Thank you so much.
It was such a blast. Thanks, guys.
And there you have it, folks.
Aisha and Tyler. You can keep up with Aisha by following her on Twitter. She's at Aisha Tyler. That's A-I-S-H-A. These days, she's hosting Whose Line Is It Anyway? And she's back as the voice of Lana in season 11. Can you believe that? Of Archer.
Fucking wow.
I know. Plus, she's in a new movie called Friendsgiving, and it just came out on video on demand. So I can't wait to check that out.
I've never talked to her before, and that was so fucking delightful.
It really was.
That's one of those conversations I could have gone for another hour. I could have just kept going.
Yeah.
Courage and Stone, check it out. It's her new line of ready to drink cocktails. They are her personal recipes, and they've taken off like crazy while we're all at home drinking alone. Some of us not alone, but I gotta say, and like I said, Ruthie and I tasted these drinks. They're incredible. So visit courageandstone.com to learn more and order your own.
Cheers.
Cheers.
That's our show. We'll be back next week with a brand new guest. Dads, the podcast is produced by Jen Samples, Nick Liao, and me, Ruthie Wyatt. Our executive producers are Joanna Solotaroff, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross. Engineering by Will Becton and Anya Jeshik. Our theme song is by Strange Hotels with additional music by John Danick. Special thanks to Sean Doherty.
And as always, you can keep up with Dads the Podcast by following us on Instagram at Team Coco Podcast. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts if you love the show. Subscribe and, you know, just tell a friend, tell a stranger, tell a bunch of strangers.
Do it.
You know what I mean? Why not? Why not just say, hey, I'm listening to this show. I like it. You might like it too. Who knows? Maybe they will. There's so many ways you can show your dad pride, and that is one of them. So thanks for listening, and we will see you back here next week.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.